dude, what do you mean you forgot to record the interview with Grinch? I know we call ourselves amateurs, but you're taking that way too seriously. Like, man, tell me you at least got Brad to do an insult intro so we don't have to make up another one of those things.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to Amateur Hour. My name is Chris Davis, and this is our bonus Patreon episode where we give extra thanks to our Patreon members. We had four awesome Patreon members this year. We had Zach Leishner, Unused Substitutes Podcast, and we had two other Patreon members, both of which contributed to an amount to where they could be featured on an episode. Ben did two awesome interviews, one with Grinch and one with Brad Buxkowski. I think I said that right, Brad. Unfortunately, as you heard in our intro, Ben forgot to hit the record button on a 40-minute conversation he had with Grinch. Grinch is really awesome, you know, heads up to Milltown Operatives. We actually recorded an episode with him last year, so if you guys want to go back and listen to that one, I'm sure it's really good still. And, I guess after Ben realized what had happened, it was like at the end of the interview, he talked to Grinch, and they decided they didn't want to reenact the conversation they just had. So I guess that's just a talk the two of them will have and none of us are going to be privy to. So I don't know. If two soccer nerds have a conversation that wasn't recorded on a podcast, did it really happen? I don't know. Maybe Ben just didn't want to, you know, do two interviews in one day, which I understand. But anyways, so we have an awesome interview with Brad. At least I assume it's awesome. Up for you in a minute, but I just wanted to update you guys real quick on League 2. The playoffs have been set for League 2. We have the host and all that, the Bantams, who are the fourth seed technically as the wild card spot. They actually are hosting the Southern Conference, which is pretty awesome. They are going to be having their games on Friday night. I assume they're going to be streaming. They haven't streamed this year, but they also have been recording their games and uploading them later, so I assume they'll just kind of speed up that timeline and just stream them live. At least I hope so, as you know, someone who can't make it down there on Friday night because of the working and all that. I'm actually taking a break of work right now to record this. Super professional, but they are playing looks like Calvary here. I'm just looking at this little bracket here. Yeah, Brazos Valley Calvary at 7:30 p.m. on July 19th, and Two Minta are playing the Villages Soccer Club at 5 p.m. that same day. The winner plays July 21st, Sunday at 7:30 p.m. And then for our South Atlantic fans, the Eastern Conference Finals are going to be, I believe, Reading United's hosting. They're playing Portland Phoenix. That's confusing. I guess they're the Phoenixes and they're in Portland. Not in Phoenix. They're playing at 7 p.m. on July 20th, whereas the Fusion will be playing the Pioneers on July 20th at 4, and the winner of that plays the very next day, July 21st at 7 p.m. And those are pretty much the two conferences we're going to focus on, but of course there is like two other conferences, and the winners of that will play, presumably, it doesn't say here, but I'm assuming the following week. Host for that, I'm sure, will be determined from the four conference winners. So who knows who will be hosting that. But very much looking forward to that. Ben and I, for the next episode, we'll let you guys know what's happened with those games and if we can watch, break them down. And then I'm actually going to try to go down to South Carolina for the final on Sunday. I do have some other things I got to do that day. So it kind of depends on how that goes. But I'm going to try to get down there and hang out with them. And then if I do, I'll definitely let you guys know. Maybe I can snag an interview or two with somebody. But in the meantime, here is Benjamin's talk with Brad, our wonderful Patreon member.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Amateur Hour. This is, I guess you could say, like a supporter for the podcast episode. I don't know if we have an official title for this, but Brad Buxkowski is a supporter of the show. And I thought it'd be interesting just to kind of hear his perspective on amateur soccer, his, I guess you could say, the way I told him, his origin story with soccer, which makes it sound very superhero-like. So, but yeah, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time, Brad.
Yeah, I'm glad to share my origin story and become a superhero.
Yeah, there you go. This is your moment. This is we'll figure out when the soccer bug bit you, I guess you could say.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, but let's take it back. I know we've talked about this since we're good friends, and we'll tailgate from time to time with Greenville FC matches. But kind of tell us where you started with soccer. What was your first perspective on the game, I guess you could say?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I played a lot of different sports. You know, as a grown man, I'm 5'9" on my best day, 170 pounds. So there were a lot of sports out there that were not an option for me. And I kind of, soccer was the one sport that I stuck with throughout youth. And then really what sucked me in was the 1994 World Cup. Like, I was still in middle school, and they came out with those classic denim jerseys and Alexi Lawless with his hair. And I just fell in love with the sport on that World Cup, and played throughout high school and played for fun after high school. And that was kind of just my real deep dive into the sport, and I've been following it ever since.
Yeah, very cool. I think, I mean, for me personally, I was 4 when that World Cup was going on, and it was well before my origin story started. But I feel like Alexi Lalas is, he wore a headband too, didn't he? Or like a hair tie kind of thing.
He did a lot of, 1994 was a weird time, Ben. You don't remember a lot of it. So it was a weird time in fashion and sports. But
yeah,
I have my differences with him and his commentary these days, but he was definitely one of my big influences when I was playing soccer. I think also because when I played, there's not really a nice way to say it, but I wasn't exactly talented. But if my coach said, hey, don't let that guy score, I could be that defender. So I resonated with Alexi on a lot of levels.
Okay. Yeah. You kind of was your inspiration to go out there and stop the opposing player as best of your ability. But, yes. But yeah, how did you grow to love the game thereafter? Because I want to say that was probably a really touchstone moment for a lot of fans with soccer. But where did your love grow with it? Whether it be maybe a specific club or just things along those lines.
Yeah. So back then, I mean, I came away from that World Cup in the summer, and I was playing in middle school soccer at the time. And just played through high school and connected with a bunch of other kids who loved this sport that honestly wasn't that, I mean, a lot of people played it as kids, but once you got to high school, it still wasn't that popular. So I connected with a bunch of other people that really fell in love with it. And we would wake up early or stay up late to watch games on ESPN and, you know, buy the posters, and we would get the soccer catalogs in the mail. So it was really almost like an underground thing back in that day of soccer, that just without that community, I wouldn't have kept the love for it. And I also had some fantastic coaches in middle school, high school, that really grew the love of the game with me. And I can't thank them enough for staying with me.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought I may have lost you there, but yeah. So it definitely seems like it was a growing thing back then. Now we've talked about it a little bit, but I believe you kind of grew to love a certain devil. I don't want to say devil loving club, but a certain Red Devil club in England. Let's tell me about a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so that goes back to what soccer was like in America back in the day. There are basically two teams that you could watch on a regular basis in the U.S., and that was Manchester United and Arsenal. at that time. And it was one of those two teams versus whoever else they were playing with. Man City wasn't even in the Premier League back in those days.
Yeah.
They were nothing. And so I just fell in love with like Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes and the whole, like, you know, that class of United fans, and became a United fan by default. I had no idea I was like selling my soul to the devil to, you know, this huge conglomerate, but I'm a fair weather fan and I don't switch teams easily. So once I made that decision, I've stuck with it since.
Yeah, I feel like at a certain point, I mean, it may just be me, but once you've got a kid or two from a club, it's kind of hard to, there's no returning a kid, I don't think. Not that I've ever seen. Yeah. And yeah, once you've yelled at a TV enough times about a club's performance, it's kind of just becomes part of your blood, I guess you could say. But
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and then how was the soccer temperature or soccer scene? Were you in Greenville at that point in time, or were you in a different part of the country?
Yeah, so I was in Greenville. I was born in Greenville. I'm 38 now, and I've spent probably about 29, 30 years of my life in Greenville. I've moved away and come back several times. But there was a lot of youth soccer going on. But like I said, once you got into high school age, it was definitely not the coolest sport to play. So there's things going on in different leagues, rec leagues, a few club teams and school teams, but it definitely wasn't the most popular.
Okay, I got you. So it sounds like there was a little bit of an underbelly of soccer interest in that type of thing, but it didn't quite boil over into being the cool sport in town, I guess you could say. Now, we're going to jump ahead a good bit here, but what did it feel like when you heard that Greenville was going to get being, of course, Greenville FC? What was that feeling like?
So that was really great. I was so excited. We have had other teams in the past throughout the years. Like, we had the Greenville Shamrocks for a couple years, had the Greenville Lions, and they were really bare bone, stripped down type of attempts, and neither one of them was successful. And so when I heard Greenville FC was coming to town, and Marco told me this later on, I didn't realize it, but the first ever social media thing they put out that Greenville FC was coming, I responded to. He was like, "You were one of the first responders." I didn't know that, until a year later, but I was just like, this is a dream come true. I think the league and the format they have going forward is really sustainable for our town. So I just got behind it right away.
Very cool. Yeah. And was that something where you were maybe curious how it was going to be, considering we've had other clubs in the past, or what was your perspective, considering you've been in Greenville for quite some time or been around the city?
Yeah, so I obviously, anytime there's a soccer announcement around the upstate, I get really excited about it. And I responded to that first thing, and then I checked into the league and how the structure was set up with the independent clubs and not the franchise model. And I just thought this could really work in our city. So the more I learned about the team, the owner group, and the league, the more excited I got more excited I was about it.
Yeah. So I guess you could say it was a different spin on the soccer sphere coming to Greenville, which, because if I'm not mistaken, either the Shamrocks or the Lions were like the PDL kind of level, right? They were part of the USL model and much more along that line, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I was actually out of the state for, they weren't here long. And I was out of the state for part of it. So I don't know all the ins and outs, but it was more, I don't even know if it was called a USL yet, but it was more along that model of club.
Okay. Very cool. And then of course, we won't talk too much about the first season. But how did it feel this last season with a couple different changes, coming off a year being the first year, of course, that at least from, I guess, our perspective, I guess you could say that off the field, it was really successful, I feel like, with Greenville FC. Going into that second year, being this year, of course, how did it feel to kind of move locations, and how did you like the upgraded venue and things like that?
Yeah, that was something that last year we weren't extremely successful on the field, but the community really gathered around it, and I kept in touch with so many people throughout the off season, and we had this great community behind it. And then when they decided that they were moving to Serene Stadium downtown, most people were really excited, but there were a lot of questions around it too, as far as parking, tailgating, things like that. And they ended up working out all of that stuff. Like, great props to the ownership group and the staff and everything. They did a great job, free parking, able to set up and tailgate. And then also the quality on the field, like, we made a leap forward this year. Going from the struggles last year to making the playoffs this year, unfortunately losing in overtime, such a close game. But I was really happy with what they did this year, and also the players appreciating the fans. The players always come over, thank the fans. They spend time with the kids. Like, they've just created such a great culture. I was really happy with that.
Yeah, because you've got, how many kids do you have, Brad?
Way too many. I've got a bunch. I've got three boys that come to all the games with me. And then I also have a daughter who's one, who she's made it to a couple games with her mom. But yeah, the boys really appreciate the time that the players take with them.
Yeah, and what do you think that means to your say influence in some ways, but role model more directly? What do you think that means to them?
Yeah, so like my boys, like, we'll be driving randomly and talking about soccer, and they'll just like break out in a chant like, "He's big, he's tall, he's Paul the Wall," you know. So Paul's like signed autographs for them. And then Toby is another one that is great with the kids. All the guys really are, but it has taken it from a sport that they really like to probably their favorite sport to play. So they've had a huge impact on my kids and plenty of others in the area, and just the soccer culture in the area.
Very cool, yeah. And you touched base on this a little bit, but how do you feel like Greenville FC, the club, has dealt with those, I guess, question marks of moving to that new venue? How do you feel like I'll be honest, I was in the same boat where I was optimistic, but I still feel like you never know with a new venue, a new set of situations that are going on, but how do you feel like those, obstacles were, addressed, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a few things that we need to work through if we're going to stay there long term, but the parking issue was huge, and we got free parking, plenty of parking within a block or two of the stadium. Tailgating issue was a big one, and we got the okay to do all kinds of, we grill down there and have beverages and everything out there. We got some food trucks in there. It's a huge stadium. So that's the one unfortunate thing. If you get 2,000 people in that stadium, you still have room for about 13 or 14,000 more.
Yeah.
so making our voices heard in that big of a stadium is kind of a big deal. But I think the supporters group did a good job with the drums and chanting and all that. There's still a few more issues to work out, but I think overall it was a positive moving to actual downtown Greenville. Like, you can go out for dinner or drinks before the game and walk down to the stadium and have a good time down there.
Yeah, very cool. I think that's one thing that's the biggest positive I took away from that change with Greenville FC. And I think it did show in some respects. I unfortunately was only able to make it to two matches, and one was I think it was that first one was the weird storm that came through that just threw everything for a loop. Yeah, lightning, thunder, all the things. But yeah, how do you see? I'd love to know your perspective on amateur soccer in general in Greenville, and why do you think it's been successful in its attempt there, considering there's been other clubs that maybe haven't been successful?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two parts to it. The first part is that it's NPSL in its current form really is a stepping stone league. You know, people can come and play, college players can come and play for the summer, get more experience, play against sometimes better talent than they're playing against in college, and get, you know, exposure to different coaches. And it's a great step for kids coming out of a town of Greenville that is growing, but it's by no means like, you know, a Charlotte, Atlanta, definitely not a Chicago. It's not a huge town, but they can then see like, okay, well, if I play here and I play for this club team and then I can play in the NPSL, then maybe I can go to USL Championship and further. So I think that's a big thing for kids to be able to see. And then also just the community, the way that Greenville FC started and continues to operate is extremely grassroots and community-based. And the community just kind of really surrounded that. The people that come, the season ticket holders, the regular attenders, the people that come out to the tailgate. There are a lot of people that I never met before Greenville FC happened that I now text with, you know, every other day on the phone. And it's created just this great community around a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's, not to bring too much of my perspective on this, because this is it's about you this time, Brad. But I think that's one thing that I just this time is about you. No, but yeah, I think that's the best thing that Greenville's done. The thing that Greenville's done the best is that they've provided an avenue for people to congregate around something that's rooted in the community. And that's one thing that I can't give them enough praise on, is that, I mean, I didn't know any of y'all that I've met through downtown operatives and LFC in general. And now it's something where whenever I'm in town, I try to organize my visits to Greenville based on games and based on events going on with Milltown operatives and things like that. Just because it becomes a family, essentially. It's been really cool just to see that naturally. And then just the different types of people that have congregated around each other, around the sport, of course.
Yeah, it's great. And there's some families, and you know, like the Allens and Alexanders, they are just mainstays of Greenville FC. The supporters group would be nothing without them. They do a fantastic job. They're so welcoming. And then there's so many other people. Like, I could go through a 10-minute long list of people we see out there every weekend. And yeah. You know, we always love to have you come down, and there's some other folks that can only make it to like two or three games a year. But when they're there, it's just like meeting up with an old friend. And I think that community is really what's going to form the like the foundation of things going forward.
Yeah, I think that's another way. That's a really good point there too, that it just, it kind of just feels like a family reunion at some point, coming together and watching games. And just, it's, I don't want to say that it doesn't matter what happens on the pitch, because it does, of course. I mean, you don't want to leave the Serene Stadium with a sour taste in your mouth, but it's, I feel like no matter the results, sometimes it's just really great just getting together with people. And I think that's something that Greenville FC has done a really excellent job of. But yeah, I think that just about does it. One thing I'm kind of curious on, is the whole idea between, because I know we've talked about it a little bit, and we talked about it a little. Greenville FC, as opposed to supporting the other club in town. I'll just say it like it is. The Greenville Triumph, maybe the pro club, technically speaking. But what made you come to that conclusion, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I think I heard most of what you said. You kind of cut out just a tiny bit there. But the difference between, for me, when USL was looking to come to Greenville and USL, the league, decided to look into our market before there was any kind of ownership group or anything. And they put out an online poll and said, would you want pro soccer in Greenville? So obviously as a soccer fan, I was like, yes, I would love that. And then the more I looked into the way that they were going to do, the more I looked into the league and how they're set up, the franchise model, the fees and things like that, I was kind of like, that's not my favorite. I don't know how I feel about that. And when Greenville FC came around with the NPSL model, I was like, well, I love that model. So I never want any soccer team in the upstate to fail. I don't wish any bad will on the Triumph. But, you know, having as many kids as I have, like I talked about, and having a job and a life and everything, there's only so much effort I can give to my hobbies these days. And so I just felt like the grassroots model, the independent ownership model, the fact that the league doesn't make their money off of franchise fees, the fact that there's no chance that a franchise will pick up and move like Columbus Crew tried to do in the MLS. I support that a lot more. So I don't, like, I have friends that are Triumph fans, and that's great. And I have not made it to a Triumph game this season, but I'm going to try to before the season ends. But if I'm going to put my, you know, passion, efforts, and money behind a team, I just pick Greenville FC because I personally prefer that model of team.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing you said about not willing or not wishing ill will on any other club, despite where you may focus your attention on, I think is a good perspective to have, because I think at times as soccer fans, we get really, because it's such a close-knit community, we get really, I don't know how to word this, but really personal about things, where you have to be one direction and you can't, and if somebody else goes against that, then they're the enemy, I guess you could say. Right. But I think it's good to keep in mind that wide view that in some respects, more soccer is better in general. And that, hopefully speaking, both clubs can coexist well. I think that's not necessarily a controversial opinion, but yeah, definitely do want to thank you for being on the show, sharing your origin story and whatnot. And last but not least, thank you for supporting the show, Brad. I do greatly appreciate that. I don't want to speak for Chris, but I think I can in that respect that he thanks you as well. But yeah, it made the trips around the Southeast a lot better. So a lot more doable. So yeah.
I do what I can, man. I love listening to the show. I love being one of the seven folks that really enjoys it.
There's seven now? That's news to me.
No, I know a lot of people that listen to it. But yeah, it's I just love the show. I love that. I love lower league soccer in the U.S. And I know there's like such a big argument about the big broad picture of soccer in the U.S., but lower leagues are so fun, man. You guys have done a great job covering. I loved your series with Lions Bridge and the other games you've been to and the perspective you give on it. So it's just, as a soccer nerd, I guess I would call myself, I don't like to say soccer snob, so I'm going to go soccer nerd. I enjoy hearing all the trips that you guys make and hearing about these other clubs that are going on in the area.
Yeah, man. Definitely appreciate that. But thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.